Willkommen zum Christoph Hess Podcast. In diesem Podcast taucht Christoph Hess tief in die Werdegänge unterschiedlichster Pferdemenschen ein und spricht mit ihnen über den emotionalen Wert, den Pferde in ihrem Leben haben. Ob Reiter, Influencer, Tierärzte oder andere Persönlichkeiten der Pferdewelt. Gemeinsam beleuchten wir, wie wir im Zeitalter von Social License für die Akzeptanz unseres Sports sorgen und unsere Reiterwelt positiv gestalten können.
It's a great honor for me to sit next to a legend, a true legend, Andrew Hoy. A warm welcome.
Well, Christoph, it's nice that you say legend because I think I'm sitting next to a legend. You've done amazing things with your life, but I'm honored to be sitting alongside of you. So I think it's a very mutual respect.
Yeah, but you are the main person. You did what I wanted to do. You are a brilliant rider, one of the very best riders in the world, one of the most successful eventing riders in the world. And this was my dream as well. And then I saw during my time when I was educated that I have not the talent. Therefore, I'm inspired watching you when you are riding. But before we talk about your way of riding, before we talk about your life in the saddle, where you're coming from? You are Australian farmer.
I grew up on a farm in a small country town in southern New South Wales in Australia, and I just started riding a pony that I actually borrowed. My parents borrowed it from my uncle, and that was a Shetland pony, a chestnut Shetland pony. And I always say, if you can get a chestnut Shetland pony to go on the line you would like it to go, on the speed you would like it to go, then there's a good chance you're going to be an Olympic champion, because I never achieved that.
Yeah, and you have been 3 times gold medal winner, and you had ridden your last Olympics 2021 in Tokyo with a chestnut horse, a French chestnut horse, winning bronze medal individual and silver medal with a team. Well, this the Olympic Games you never ever will forget.
Look, I think anyone who goes to Olympic Games, they never forget the experience of going to Olympic Games, because with the equestrian sport, this is where our sport goes from the back pages of the newspaper, or when people are still reading newspapers, to more the front page. Especially if you do well, the whole your country is watching. It is such an international event, and you have the greatest athletes in the world there. And so for me, Tokyo was very special, and I know that we didn't have spectators, but it so much felt like an Olympic Games to me. And I have to say, I think it's only the Japanese people and the country of Japan that would have been able to pull it off, with it being right at the end of COVID and the preparation all during COVID. And so it's an absolute credit to the Japanese people as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And your horse was a chestnut horse. And was this chestnut horse a little bit similar to your horse, which you had ridden as a small kid, a Shetland pony in New South Wales in Australia?
I think the only similarity, Christoph, is the colour. Because the Vasily de Lassos, he's the most wonderful personality. He's one of the most dynamic horses I've ridden when it comes to cross country and show jumping. He's just absolutely spectacular. And I think with the chestnut Shetland pony, Ginger was his name, I never developed a a relationship and a partnership, like I have developed a relationship and partnership with Vasily de Lassos.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so very different. But look, every experience, whether it's good, whether it's bad, it's an experience that you learn from. And I really think that you learn from the mistakes that we make in our lives. We learn from the bad experiences, and the good experiences, for sure we learn by those, but they happen so easy and so much in our comfort zone, whereas the bad experiences really, whatever that bad experience might be, and a bad experience for one person is not necessarily a bad experience for another person, so it's got to be you as an individual. And I really think, never be afraid of making a mistake. Never be afraid of doing something and getting it wrong, because you will learn from it, no matter what the experience is.
Mm-hmm. And now we look to the Olympic Games. First to Vasily. What did you learn from Vasily? It is your last very, very famous horse. He was so successful. You went with him after this to the World Championships in Pratoni. So therefore, it is not the only horse which was a hero for you, but maybe the last before the new horses are coming now.
Like you're absolutely right. He's the most current of my wonderful horses that I've ridden. And when I say the most current at Olympic Games. And so, what have I learned from Vasily de Lassos? It was, I would say, 6 years I was the only person ever to sit on Vasily. Mm-hmm. And I had to feel every step that he took. I had to feel the dynamics of the horse. I had to feel whether I thought it was going in the correct direction or not the correct direction. And no other person can ever feel that for you. And for me, it was working with Vasily is just a partnership that we have developed, not just me, because it's also the horse. There has to be just enormous respect for the animals that you sit on, and they have to respect you as an athlete. We have to respect them as an athlete. And respect, you spend a lifetime gaining credibility and respect. Mm-hmm. And you can ruin it in 5 minutes.
Wow.
And for me, it's every time I'm working with the horses, I'm trying to understand their personality, what the challenges are that they find, and also the challenges that I find as an individual and as an athlete, and work with their strengths and keep on trying to develop their strengths. Mm-hmm. And then that automatically lifts their weaknesses. So mm-hmm. I don't go out every day digging in the same hole, trying to make the things that they find difficult, trying to make those better.
Mm.
I try to just work with their strengths, develop them so that they have a great understanding and a great respect for me as a person that's working with them. And yeah, like it's something that my dad taught me when I was very young, and that was, takes a lifetime to build respect, to gain respect
mm-hmm.
and credibility, and you can ruin it in 5 minutes, and I've never forgotten it.
Your father, back to Australia, New South Wales, your farm is a little bit between Melbourne and Sydney, closer to Melbourne, on the east side of the continent, the country Australia. Tell us a little bit, the people who listen to this podcast, How was the situation at home? You said you have a chestnut pony, but this was only the fun part. What was the situation of your parents who have been the owners of a big farm with a lot of animals?
Look, I think I think I've lived an unbelievably wonderful life in the fact that my parents gave me opportunity. But the one thing that my parents really taught me was that to be successful, number one, you need to place good people around you. Number two, it's going to be just hard work. And I suppose it started from, like, I started with my Shetland pony, and then I went on to another very nice pony, a Palomino pony. And the Palomino pony, he was like an absolute, well, actually in between the Shetland pony and the Palomino was a Welsh mountain pony, and he was a little bit of a challenge, but that was, I didn't have him for so long, but I went to Pony Club in Australia, and Pony Club was just something where you went and you did all the Pony Club games and you got to ride out with other children, and I think what I developed was just a love for working with my pony. And then if I fast track through to the age of when I was 17 and I was then at agricultural college, my father said to me once, would you like to go to the snow for a week or would you like to go to the Melbourne show? I said, I want to go to the show. He said, so how much riding do you want to do? And I said, look, I really don't know, but I just enjoy riding. And so my father said to me, I'll support you, but I'm not going to give you any money. So, 17-year-old boy, I looked at my father and I said, so where is the support? He said, it's really clear. What I'll do is, while you're not at agricultural college, while you're not riding your pony, I will give you a job. And that is that you can work on the farm. On one condition, that you start work at 7:30 in the morning, the same as all of the other employees. He said, if you work for 1 hour and you then want to ride your pony and do other things throughout the day, that's fine. He said, I'll pay you for 1 hour. If you want to work 10 hours, I pay you for 10 hours. And so I thought, wow, this is just wonderful. So with that, it then gave me the finances so that I could do what I wanted to do. I could use the hay from the barn, but I had to ask for it. I didn't have to pay for it, but I had to ask for it. My dad helped me convert our chicken barn into two stables, so I had two stables for my horses. He helped me put some concrete down out in front, so I had somewhere out where I could tie my horses up. So in the winter months, it wasn't full of mud, and in the summer it wasn't full of dust. And so he helped me with lots of things like that. I could use the car and the horse trailer that my parents owned, but I always had to have the horse trailer washed out and parked in the barn before I started work, after, if I'd been to a show over the weekend and didn't, if I got home on Sunday night, I washed it out, I parked it in the barn, and then I had to have the car full of fuel, but I didn't have to buy a car. And so there was, at the time, I realized there was a lot of support, but I did not realize how much support it was. My dad grew up as an engineer in the city. And so he was very clinical about the way that he went about things and the way he went about farming. And so with that, I think he gave me a lot of very good structure, because I'm very much a structure and systems person. And so I've obviously got that from my dad. My mother, who is still healthy at the age of 97, she's turning 98 this year. She is so healthy, so good with what she's doing. I found out from her about 5 years ago that she was a sports captain at school. So she was obviously very good at sport. But I didn't have this knowledge, because when you're young, you think, I remember going to my dad's 40th birthday party and I was 6 years of age. And I thought, well, he's got no idea. And he's going to be pushing up daisies in a few years' time. And so, but over the years, you learn how much knowledge and guidance your parents have and that they actually give to you. And the, I know I fast-tracked from when I had the Palomino pony through to the age of 17, but in that in-between period, I did pony club. My parents took me to the local shows, and so I could do jumping classes and riding classes, and just, I would only ever have one pony at a time. And then I did some rodeo riding, and I did camp drafting. Camp drafting, it's like American cutting, where you're working with cattle as well as the horse. And so I became junior Australian champion at that. And that was just something that actually taught me a lot, to work with men that work with cattle all the time. And you had to learn how the cattle would run. You had to make a judgment of their personality, because you'd only have a very short time, like a 20 to 30 second window to select, maybe 45 second window to select a beast or a cow that you would want to work with your horse. And so I learned an enormous amount from the men that lived in the high plains and in the mountains with cattle. And and that's through my father being involved in the Camp Drafting Association. He was one of the founding members of that. And it's that young childhood also chasing kangaroos through the mountains. Like, that was for me just a joy. And I learned at that time to go with my pony, and not, if the kangaroo went to the left side of the tree and the pony went to the right side of the tree and I wanted to go the left side of the tree, I was going to hit the tree. So I soon learned to go with my pony. And I think all of these things have contributed to the horsemanship skills that I've had today. But it's also not just the horses that I've learned so much from. It is the people that have supported me throughout my career. Because, as I said earlier, to be successful, you have to place good people around you. And my parents helped me in the very early stages of my life to do that. Then I've had very good guidance since.
Before we talk about the good guidance since and the good guidance which you have now, in the past, not in the past, in your daily life now, I want to ask the question, because you had spoken about your parents with such a respect. It's really wonderful for my heart listening to this. What do you think, what was the vision, what your parents had, being a farmer in New South Wales, or the Andrew Hoy, the young Andrew Hoy, age of 18, starting a career in the parents' farm? Was this a vision, or what do you think? You are a father as well, you have a daughter and a son. Do you have visions with your kids, or what is your idea what the your kid should do, and what do you think what your parents' wishes have been in the old days?
It's a very good question. I've never been asked that before, Christoph. So this has really got me thinking. I actually don't know what my parents' vision was, but I can speak about my own personal situation now with having two young children. And I've spoken so much. Like, the children at this point in time, they're seven. Philippa is 7 years of age. Oscar is 5 years of age. And Steffi and I have spoken so much about this. The one thing that we want to try and guide our children with, number one, is to have respect. Number two, to have values. And I think respect comes right from the day that they're born, that you can start to guide them in that way. Values is something that they only gain over a period of time, and they understand the values of things, whether it's be moral values or whether it's financial values. But the one thing that we have always said is, we don't mind whatever they do, we will support the children. But what we want them to do is have fun at a very young age, that they have to enjoy it. And we try to give them the many different experiences, because Oscar, I think, has an amazing talent and feeling for the horses, but he loves tractors, he loves trucks, he loves rugby, he loves soccer, he loves being wild. But I think what the thing with all of this is, they have to find their own way. And Philippa is much more shy, I would say, than Oscar will be, that she's the older one. She's got a joy for the ponies, and I just see her riding, and I'm really, really inspired, or I would, inspired's probably the wrong word. I would say I really value and feel very proud of how well she sits on the pony at the moment. Now, absolutely for sure, do we give her the best opportunity that we can? Yes, because Philippa doesn't have to look after the pony every day, because we don't live at the stable. So the people in the stables assist us enormously with caring for the pony and the health of the pony. But I have to say, when Philippa is at the stables, I feel for a seven-year-old girl, she spends as much time as she can with the ponies. And it doesn't mean that she has to be riding every moment, but she does enjoy just getting them out and grooming them, or plaiting their mane or plaiting their tail, and just handling the ponies. And I think this is something, I think purely because of the situation she's in, that I can see this continuing at the moment. But when she becomes a teenager and becomes an adult, this is up to her as to whether she wants to continue with the horses.
Yeah, thank you for this description of your kids, and thank you what you will give them as opportunities. And now we are go back to Australia. There was one day that you said, though, now my goal is starting a career as a professional eventing rider. But this was not just from the Palomino pony and from the Chestnut pony. There was, I think, a big step to come into the Australian team. 1978, first time America, Kentucky World Championships, first time representing Australia on the highest international level. I think we talk now a little bit what you did, because you are not a legend because of this, but this is part being a legend, starting a career in the late 70s, and I don't know when we will finish it.
Yeah, we're starting in 1978 was when I rode my first World Championships. And I would have to say it happened by mistake. And what do I mean by that? I mean that I got the call up to become part of the Australian team 2 weeks before the Australian team left to go to America. And it's quite a funny story, because I can remember loading hay onto a truck with my father. I was stacking the bales of hay on the truck. My father was throwing them off the haystack. And my mother came to the hay barn, and she said, she spoke to my father and myself, and she said, "I've just had the Secretary General of the Australian Equestrian Federation on the telephone, and he said he would like to speak to your father." And I remember my father at the time, he was a little bit upset at the time, and he said, "These horses, they are just taking so much time. We're not getting the work done that we should do." This was the day before mobile phones. So my father had to leave the hay barn, and he went back to the house to call the Secretary General. He said to my mother, "You get onto the stack, you throw the hay down, Andrew can keep stacking. I'll go and make the phone call, and I'll be back. It won't be long." So my father came back. I said, "So what did he want?" Mr. Cochran was his name. "What did Mr. Cochran want?" He said, "He told me that two of the riders that are in the team to go to the World Championships are out because they've either got injuries themselves or horses have got injuries. And would I go into the team?" And I said to my dad at the time, I said, this is not possible because my horse is just in the field. So I said, "So what did you say to him?" He said, "I told him we'd think about it." And so, and that I'd call him back tomorrow. And anyway, over about a 4-hour period of going out and feeding the cattle and me getting into the truck to move from one field to the next with my dad and with much discussion, we decided that if I didn't take this opportunity, I might never get another opportunity to go to represent Australia. Because it wasn't even on the radar. I hadn't even thought about this kind of thing. So I went into the training camp. And it was like 2 days later, I went into the training camp with absolutely zero knowledge. But there was a dressage coach there. There was a jumping coach there. So I felt to get my horse fit, the best thing was to take a dressage lesson every day, take a jumping lesson every day, and to gallop my horse every day to get him fit. Well, this is so far from the reality of today's world, and I just have so much respect for the horse that I had at the time, because he stayed totally sound. He was in really good order. He was only a very small horse, but my parents had selected him for me when I was 15 years of age, and the horse was only 5 years of age, and I was 19 when I went to my first world championships with him. And that horse then ended up, a horse called Davy, ended up traveling around the world 3 times. And so I was just incredibly privileged to have a little horse like that. And like, I think it worked because I'd spent so much time doing so many different things with him, like going to pony club on a regular basis. I used to tack him up in the morning. I'd go and muster some cattle and bring them into the cattle yards, and then I'd tie him up in the cattle yards and he'd have water and feed there, and then we would do work with the cattle, and then I'd ride him to take the cattle back. And if we weren't doing cattle work, I used to ride him every day around the property to check the cattle and the sheep on the property. And so I used to just spend absolutely hours with him, and so there was a tremendous bond and partnership and relationship that developed. And I suppose that was one of the massive learnings from that, is the partnership that you have, but it's only continuing on through the sport and working with animals that you realize the value of a partnership. Mm-hmm. You have to have time in the industry. Mm-hmm. And it's like any relationship. You have to spend time with your partner or your wife or your children or your horses to develop a good relationship and a good understanding.
When we look from your early years in Australia to today, there is long time between, 8 Olympic Games, 6 medals, 3 times gold and bronze and silver, but 3 times gold with the team. When you dream at night, what was your favorite horse and what was your favorite event?
I've been asked this question so many times, Christoph, which is my favorite horse. I find that so difficult to answer, because I can look at my horses and their sporting success, and I can value each sporting success. Mm-hmm. But to develop the partnership, I would say every horse that I've got to championship level has just been an incredible journey. And as I said before, I have not done this alone. Mm-hmm. I've done it with absolutely fantastic support and fantastic guidance. And for any young person that's listening to this, it's just so important that you go and seek advice from people who, number one, you respect, but number two, have been in the industry for some time and have got a very good understanding. Never be afraid to go and ask someone, can I have 5 minutes of your time, or can I have half an hour of your time? I just would like to ask for some advice and your thoughts on whatever it may be. Because the people who have been successful, they are only too happy to give you support. If they can see you as a young person, so much want to learn and so much want to go forward with what you're doing, it is unbelievable. The generosity of people who have been in the industry for a long time and who are only so happy to support. And I think that's something that is just important for every young person to understand and and to really, really take that on board, because it's a difference between having good results, and I mean good results, what you can personally do yourself with your horse or whatever you're doing in the industry. And the question of which has been my best horses, I think, like, Vasily de Lassos is the most, you see him cross country, he's so dynamic and explosive in the way that he runs and jumps. His show jumping record is just absolutely phenomenal. Like, just continually jumps clear. But he's not a personality that likes you to enter his comfort zone. But he likes you to be there. And he knows if you're not there. And I think, like, he's, as we spoke before, he's my most current Olympic horse. But then I go back to a horse that I rode with great success, a horse called Moonfleet. Again, he was a thoroughbred horse. The most beautiful moving horse in the dressage arena. Absolute joy to ride cross country. But I had to encourage him on every step. Yet when I looked at it on television, it never looked like that. He looked to just float along. Then I go back to success that I had in 1996 with winning a gold medal with the Australian team at Atlanta and Sydney, a horse called Darian Powers. He was the most beautiful grey horse, and he had what I would describe as charisma. You would see him appear in the dressage arena and everyone would just say, wow. Like, he was just the most charismatic horse, but such a gentle horse. Then 1992, where I rode Barcelona, a horse called Kiwi. That was a horse that I bought in New Zealand in 1983. Again, I had the most wonderful partnership with that horse. And then I had other horses that I rode at World Championships, a horse called Just James. Then my first horse that I took to to World Championships, Alternative Olympics, won Burley Olympic Games in 1984. Davy, that was my first pony club horse that I spoke about. And he was just a very gentle horse. But he, every horse I found and that I've worked, and I, like in 2004, I rode a horse called Mr. Prakatan. Well, Mr. Prakatan, he was not a flamboyant horse, but he was just absolute workmanlike in everything that he did. And it's, if you talk to people who have been unbelievably successful in their sporting career in the equestrian industry, like Isabel Vert has written a book, and Stephanie, my wife, has read it because it's in German. But she said, Andrew, I've got to get you the podcast for this, because Isabel can talk about every horse's personality that she's ridden. And she's just the most phenomenal equestrian athlete. And all of my horses all have their own individual personality. And I would say that this is something that's probably worked to, in one of the greatest tools that I've got is to work with the horse's personalities, because I find when I've spent time with a horse that they go in and they absolutely fight for me. And I, when I say fight for me, they really dig deep. And it's not that I go out to ride a horse to its maximum and gallop a horse to its maximum strength. My greatest, one of my greatest feelings is when I've run cross country, to come in at the end of the cross country, and as soon as I get off the horse, for the vets to come and take the heart rate of the horse to make sure it is below 100 virtually straight away. That's one of the greatest joys, because I never like to hit a fence. I never like there to be what I call hairy moments, moments where you think, ooh, where if you're watching, you hold your breath and think, oh, Andrew was lucky there, or the horse just was able to stand up. Those, I just do not like those moments at all. I just, if I've got a saying that I really feel that I want with when I'm riding, I was asked by one of the most fantastic photographers in the world, Jacques Toffi. He said to me, Andrew, I want you to describe, a book is being put together, and he said, I want to have a photograph of you in there, and I want you to describe in one sentence what eventing is to you. And I said to Jacques, I don't need one sentence. I can describe it in one word of what I try to work towards. That one word is harmony. And do I achieve harmony all the time? No. But that's my feeling. That's what I really want, is harmony. And to how do you get harmony with only understanding the horse's personality, with understanding the horse's ability, with having the horse healthy within, having it well shod, good nutrition, really well fitting equipment, with you making sure that you are healthy as an athlete sitting on the horse to make sure that you can work with the horse's personality. That's what brings harmony. It's not one, it's one word that encompasses so many things.
That is a wonderful explanation. And at the end of the day, it could be the final sentence of this podcast. But before you say the final sentence, I have another question, because we have people, young people, and you have such a long period with horses, and horses made your life. When someone would ask you, why should I give my kids into a pony club, or in Germany we say in eine Reitschule, riding club, or something like this, why should a kid learn to ride? Today, you had learned in the last century in Australia, it's a special situation, but I think mainly people here in Europe will hear this, but I hope in Australia, New Zealand as well, this podcast. But why should someone start to ride, to have a contact to horses today, 2025?
It's a really good question, because in today's world, everything is so instant. If we want something today, we just go and use our credit card. Like, I'm at the stage where I do not carry any cash, because I pay with my phone. Well, at the turn of the century, who would have said you could pay for a cup of coffee with your telephone? Like, and so when I grew up, the horse was very much, not very much, it was probably going towards the end of the stage as a means of transport. It was an animal that was used on the farm. The horse was used on the farm to move livestock and cattle, and to view the property, to move around the property. And everything has become so mechanized in today's world. So what does a horse bring to a child or a young person, a young teenager? The thing that I would say is, and this is something that I really see with children and people that are working with horses, and I think there's two sides that I bring to this now. There is one side, if you look at people that are a little disabled, the movement of the horse helps to mobilize many people who maybe have a disability. And the horses, they understand when someone is around them who does not have complete full mobility. Not every horse, but there are some very, very special horses out there. And that mobilization of the body, I think, is it really, and the joy that you see on people's faces when they're with the horses, when it's a very special occasion that the riding for the disabled have, or where they can work like that. So I think that is one aspect that I think is very, very therapeutic. From a child that is got the opportunity of going and being with in so many sports or so many activities that are available. The one thing that I feel is what horses bring to young people is they have to respect the horse. It is a living being, and I think that it's not like a dog. You see, in today's world, many dogs are living inside the house, and so they're very much humanized, is the way I would describe it. But the horse, you have to care for the horse. You have to observe the horse. You have to observe whether the weather conditions are a challenge for the horse. And if the weather conditions are a challenge for the horse, you have to make judgment as to how can you assist the horse in the situation if you don't have a stable, or if you are at a riding school in Germany or a riding club, or in Australia at a pony club or anything like that. You have to care for the well-being of that horse, whether it's the feeding, the trimming of the feet, the health of the coat. So you have to have the horse healthy within. That doesn't mean that you have to go and you have to give it hard feed all the time, but you have to make sure with the finances that you have that you can actually care for the horse in a good way. And there are so many different levels of riding. And then when you actually care for the horse from the ground, there's the situation is if you would like to ride your pony or your horse, that it's, for me, it's really important that you understand that the horse is not just a means of transport. It's not just a means of, well, let's just get a saddle and put it on. It's important that you get guidance as to how well is the horse, does the saddle fit the horse? How well does the bridle fit the horse? Is it the suitable bit? Can you make that judgment without having support? Absolutely not. Mm. But you can get support without having to go to great financial extremes to get that support. And for me, the horse also teaches children a form of responsibility. They have to care for it every day. Mm-hmm. Or if they're not caring for it, they have to make sure, facilitate the situation that the horse does have regular care and regular observation to see that it is in good health. And so what that will bring to a child or a young person is a wonderful degree of responsibility and care. Mm. And I think this is something in today's world, we all get focused on what we would like to do. But the one thing that I feel is slowly slipping away is the fact that we don't say hello to everyone that walks past. Mm. We don't. People get so tied up with their mobile phone, which in today's world you cannot survive. Mm. In in the modern world, you need a mobile phone.
Absolutely.
You need to be able to have the internet. But it's really good to look away from the screen at times and to actually see what's around you in nature, because nature is very special. And for me, that doesn't mean that you have to go down the complete nature route, but I think it's really important that you do view away and don't get tied up from being involved with everything that's on the mobile phone. And the other wonderful thing that it provides for young people or any person is mobility. What do I mean by mobility? Is that you have to get out of your chair to actually, or the lounge, to go and actually care for the horse. And I really think that exercise, why am I still able to do what I'm doing in the equestrian industry at my age, is the fact that I've been mobile throughout my life, but not to the extreme of abusing my body. And one of the most wonderful things of the equestrian industry is that if you are sitting on a horse, the symmetry that it brings to your body is absolutely fantastic. We either write with our right hand or we write with our left hand. We are always a little bit stronger on one side of our body than the other side. But when I am riding, the one thing I'm thinking about all the time is my posture, and do I have the same pressure in the left rein as the right rein? Am I allowing with my hand? Is the horse accepting of the leg? It's about this situation about applying a small pressure and releasing the pressure. And it's not about applying a pressure, holding the pressure on. It's about apply and release. It's equally as important to release as it is to apply. And it's like entering a comfort zone of a horse or an animal or a person, and then being able to step back when you know you've stepped too far into that comfort zone. And I think that this is something that is really special. Horses do not speak English. We do not speak horse. So how do you communicate with an animal? Through a feeling. And it's not about a spiritual feeling. It's about a feeling of working with and working with, I used the word before, harmony. Harmony is where you work together. And this is understanding personalities. And it helps, I think, it's a form of communication that I think is so advantageous if a young person can learn this. It's so advantageous to them, both mentally and physically, to be able to have this special communication. But it doesn't mean that you have to sleep with them. It doesn't. I love my horses to bits, but I absolutely allow them to have their own space, and that they can still be a horse, that they can run and gallop and buck and play in the field in their own space. And then all of my horses that I've ridden at Olympic Games absolutely love competition. Absolutely love it. And there is no person physically strong enough to make an animal that's weighing 500 to 650 kilos do anything. We've got two little dachshunds that run around that we can't at times get to come to us. And so it's about a communication, and that has to come through understanding the animals. And I think this is what is so special about the horses. And I just see with Philippa, our Steffi and my daughter, the joy that she has on her face when she's riding is just, I have to view it to see it. And it's very, very special. And so this is something that I feel a parent can actually bring for their children. It's a kind of investment, a life investment. But don't be afraid to get advice.
Andrew, thank you. It was a pleasure to listen. It was a pleasure to watch how you were explaining it. For me, it was a fun evening when we did it. And I hope that very, very many people had the time to listen to your words. You had given us a lot of inspiration for our horses, but a lot of inspiration how to live in harmony. And I hope you will have a harmonious time in front of you with your lovely, lovely family, with Steffi, with Philippa, with Oscar, and with your horses.
Christoph, thank you so much. A lovely evening.
Das war der Christoph Hess Podcast. Vielen Dank, dass ihr dabei wart. Wenn euch die Folge gefallen hat, abonniert den Podcast, um keine spannenden Episoden zu verpassen. Bis zum nächsten Mal und denkt daran, gemeinsam können wir den Reitsport positiv verändern.